Welcome to a special edition of Oncology Today, what clinicians want to know about the use of anti-CD38 antibodies in the management of multiple myeloma. This is medical oncologist Dr. Neil Love. For this program, I met with Professor Philippe Moreau from the University Hospital of Nantes in France. In addition to this interview, there's also a corresponding video program featuring Professor Moreau's slide presentation. For this program, we asked 55 general medical oncologists in community-based practice to suggest questions to ask Professor Moreau. And to begin, we focused on one of the most common questions we received. How would he compare the risks and benefits of daratumumab to isatuximab?
Well, to be honest, I don't see much of a difference when comparing Dara and Isa. To my opinion, the efficacy is identical. And as I mentioned, the safety profile is also very, very similar. And indeed, when you are looking at patients that are really Dara refractory, progressing on daratumumab, you cannot salvage them with isatuximab and vice versa. When patients are failing isatuximab, daratumumab is not able to salvage those patients. It means that the resistance and the mechanisms of the resistance are identical to the two agents. So that's a very, very important point. In fact, when a patient is failing ISA, that's not logical to use DARA and vice versa.
What about this question? I thought it was very interesting. Do you see CD38 deleted after people are treated?
Yeah, that's a very, very, very good question indeed. And that's true that when we are proposing DARA or isatuximab, after some weeks of treatment, some months of treatments, CD38 is downregulated. In fact, if you are looking at the bone marrow, you are selecting the plasma cells and looking at the plasma cells by flow cytometry, it seems that CD38 almost disappeared. And the rate of the number of antigens, of CD38 antigens, on the tumor cells is really highly decreased. So why to go on and continue the treatment when CD38 is has almost no expression? And in fact, that's very important to look at the mode of action. And CD38 antibodies are acting via a direct effect, but also this immunomodulatory effect. And to have a long, long, long response, it means that this is probably the immune effect of CD38 and not only the direct effect on the tumor cells. So that's a very, very good point.
I think I know how you're going to answer this, but it's interesting that somebody would ask the question, which was, do you start out with IV therapy for the first dose and then transition to sub-Q or start with sub-Q right away?
No, we are starting with sub-Q straight away, in fact. And when you are looking at the skin reaction, for example, and for the group of patients for whom we should stop because of a skin reaction, that's really less than 1% of the cases. So it means that potentially you can start with sub-Q for all patients without any risk.
What about this question of the potential combinations from a biological translational point of view? Are there any combinations that sort of theoretically make sense? For example, you know, IMIDs, maybe you mentioned the immune effect of anti-CD38. Any thoughts about what an ideal partner is for anti-CD38?
Yeah, that's definitely a very, very good question because, you know, when we started to use DARA, DARA was tested first as single agent, in fact, monotherapy for very advanced patients. And the same is true for isatuximab. And in very advanced patients failing IMIDs and proteasome inhibitors, the response rate was 30% and the duration of response was rather short. And we tested immediately the combination of CD38 antibodies, DARA and ISA, either with IMIDs and proteasome inhibitors. And I believe that probably the best partner is an IMID. And lenalidomide is probably the best partner to both daratumumab and isatuximab due to the mode of action, the immune effect. And when you're looking at the POLLUX data with len plus daratumumab, outstanding results. Maybe we have some here synergistic activity. On the opposite, with proteasome inhibitors, the effect is increased, but not as much as IMiD combination.
We had almost 300 questions submitted for you to consider. Obviously, we can't go through all of them. We were actually thinking, we were playing around with artificial intelligence, AI, you know, ChatGPT to put all the data in there. But I can tell you, my ChatGPT is, I'm going to tell you the most common, by far, the most common question. Here's an example of it. Let me just read it to you. And again, you know, I think, of course, there are regulatory issues, you know, depending upon, you know, your country, et cetera. And a lot of times what we try to focus on is just the kind of putting aside regulatory issues. What do you think theoretically would be the optimal therapy? Here's one, an example of the most common question. I use anti-CD38 antibodies in all newly diagnosed myeloma patients, regardless of risk and transplant eligibility. Is there a reason I should reconsider this? What would be a reason not to offer an anti-CD38 combination?
Well, definitely that's a very, very, very good question, because we know that we have two groups of patients, patients with, let's say, standard risk that are, well, 70-75% of the cases, and patients with high risk disease, especially poor cytogenetics or revised ISS3, for example. And when looking at the randomized study, for example, the MAIA, Lendex versus DRD, both groups of patients are improved with the addition of daratumumab. Dara is improving the outcome, not only of standard risk, but also of high risk. Unfortunately, the PFS analysis are not showing superposable results. It means that even with daratumumab, patients with high risk have a poorer outcome as compared with patients with standard risk. But nevertheless, versus no Dara, there is a difference in favor of the triplet combination. And the same is true for VRD-DARA. If you're looking at the Griffin study, VRD-DARA is better than VRD for both groups, standard and high risk. So that's true that you can use CD38 antibodies for all patients frontline.
So what about the choice of anti-CD38. Of course, Dara is the one that's currently, I think, used the most, but you showed quite a bit of data with isatuximab. You know, again, putting aside access issues, do you see much difference in the benefit in the first line setting with Dara versus Isa?
So, isatuximab was developed after daratumumab. So we have less data, we have less randomized studies, and for example, we don't have any study looking at Lendex plus isatuximab frontline yet. We have the MAIA with Lendex Dara, but not Lendex isatuximab. But to my opinion, there is really no difference. When you're looking at VRD Dara or VRD isatuximab tested in the setting of stem cell transplantation, the response rate are very, very similar, in fact, and the safety profile as well. So to my opinion, no difference, but we have less data and less clinical studies or official approvals for isatuximab. Currently, we have only KD isatuximab, the IKEMA study, and PD isatuximab, the IKAYA study. And obviously for daratumumab, we have a higher number of trials. But those trials with isatuximab are ongoing, in fact.
So, yeah, speaking of trials, I was mentioning to you that I had the pleasure of spending a couple hours yesterday doing a program with Paul Richardson. And I was asking him, you know, we were, one of the things we were, of course, talking about was the determination study. And I was asking, you know, him whether he had more thoughts on that at this point, but also where things were heading in the future. And he told me, although I don't think it definitely hasn't been done, it hasn't been launched, but he told me that what they're hoping to do for determination two is another trial looking at the issue of transplant, but focused on high risk patients. So lower risk patients are not going to get transplanted, or no standard risk. Which is pretty interesting. But the thing that was also interesting was that the therapy that was being looked at was bortezomib, dex, iberdomide, and isatuximab.
No, and definitely. That's interesting. Determination study, the first determination study did compare VRD plus or minus stem cell transplantation. And the results are very, very similar to another study performed in France with the French group, showing that the patients, some patients are really benefiting more of autologous stem cell transplantation. And I know that in the U.S., patients with standard risk, in some centers, some physicians are reluctant, you know, to propose systematically upfront high-dose melphalan. So that's why the determination two will focus on high-risk disease. And the idea of using a quadruplet combination, obviously, is a good one. And we have now the Cassiope study with VTD Dara, the Griffin study with VRD Dara. We will have other data with daratumumab into the Perseus study, VRD Dara as well, showing very good results. The German study with VRD isatuximab. So that's logical to use a quadruplet. And why not VRD isatuximab? That's exactly the German HD7 study. So what Paul Richardson would like to do is to replace, in fact, lenalidomide by iberdomide. And iberdomide is a cell mode. So the mode of action of iberdomide is very similar to that of lenalidomide, but we know that is a more potent drug. So he wants to use the best, in fact, in terms of immunomodulatory effect and iberdomide instead of len. That's a good idea, to my opinion, and maybe it will increase the response rate. And we have some data, in fact, of the combination of iber plus isatuximab. And for example, we have an ongoing study in France with the combination of iber and isatuximab in the maintenance setting after stem cell transplantation.
What do you think about the idea of jumping to isatuximab in this study? You know, it's kind of interesting, I'll say.
Definitely. This is something that, we can do easily. There are other important issues. You know, what is the cost of the two drugs? And this is all, a very important issue. You know, that the cost of drugs for myeloma patients is very, very important. So we need to try to work on the convenience. What is best? We need to, and sub-Q is really more convenient for sure. We need to work on the optimal design, but we need also to work on the cost effectiveness of some combinations. And in this setting, there are many, many differences when we are comparing Europe, US. So that's very difficult to compare worldwide isatuximab and daratumumab. There are some differences that are changing, in fact, from one country to the other.
Right. One other thing he commented on that I'd like to ask you about, it not so much about anti-CD38, but I was just fascinated. I had never heard about this. I know that in the original determination presentation, and Joseph McHale, when he commented on this in the discussion, they didn't see the benefit in African-American patients. And I sort of figured, you know, maybe it was not an, you know, small numbers or whatever. And apparently, Paul was telling me they're doing a presentation of more data on this at ASH, Dr. Zonder, but he couldn't tell me what, you know, couldn't tell me what was going to be presented because it's embargoed. But the idea that maybe there's actually a biologic, he was talking about altered genetic variations that are seen in African-American people, which is kind of, apparently, according to him, was connected to the neutropenia that you often see in African-American, you know, for example, triple negative breast cancer, classically African-American patients, they get a lot more neutropenia. So I was just fascinated that there may be some biology. And I guess the real, that this maybe was a real finding that, you know, African-American patients don't benefit at all. And, you know, very few big phase three trials have that number of African-American patients. So I was just curious, particularly biologically, if you could help me understand more about what's going on here.
No, this is something that is very, very important to identify. What are the genetic responsibilities of for those differences. And that's true that when you're looking at the data, it seems that some subgroup of patients are not benefiting that much about stem cell transplantation. I don't know what is proposed from Dr. Zander and will be presented at ASH. That will be very, very important to look. So that's why, you know, FDA is now asking more and more for a number of patients, African-American, enroll into clinical trials to see if the benefit is identical, but also if the toxicity is the same.
Yeah, no, I thought it was absolutely fascinating. I wonder in other cancers, et cetera, whether or not there are changes. We're just not seeing it because there aren't enough patients in the study. So we also got a lot of questions in terms of upfront treatment, particularly in the transplant eligible patients of maintenance therapy. Yep. So, you know, questions about how you approach maintenance on patients who get Dara as part of upfront treatment, to use Dara in maintenance and for how long. Can you comment about, again, from your perception, sort of what the ideal approach is? Do you look at MRD when you consider this? And what about risk?
Yeah, that's a very, very, very difficult question, in fact. And you know that for maintenance, we only have one agent that is approved, in fact, and that's lenalidomide after stem cell transplantation. And the label is until progression. So this is something that we are doing, in fact. But we tried in the past to also use other agents. And for example, ixazomib, a proteasome inhibitor, was tested during maintenance with a negative study. We had also another study coming from Spain with the combination of len-ixazomib versus len alone. And again, there was no difference. Currently, we are waiting for ongoing trials that are very important, that are comparing len versus len plus CD38 antibodies, len versus len plus Dara or len versus plus isatuximab. And based on the results that will be released very soon, probably the guidelines will change, in fact, or we need an official approval of a combination with len plus Dara or len plus isatuximab. That's not yet possible. We also have now new agents coming, such as bispecific antibodies, and you know that we are about to start a very important study comparing len versus len plus teclistamab versus teclistamab alone. So maybe in the future, bispecific antibodies will replace len and IMIDs. There is also a head-to-head comparison of len versus elranatamab. That is the second-in-class bispecific antibody targeting BCMA. So many, many ongoing trials. And there is also this issue of a high-risk disease. So should we add proteasome inhibitors to IMIDs? And you know that the group of Emory in Atlanta tested VRD as maintenance, one cycle every 3 months, for example, for patients with high risk, such as 17P, for example. So those are very, very important questions, but we need good data and good clinical trials.
Do you think that either now or in the future, MRD is going to factor into decisions about maintenance therapy? People bring up the issue of people are MRD negative. Can they stop maintenance therapy? Would they do it differently? Stop and go strategies. Any thoughts about where that might be heading?
Yeah, in fact, we know for now, well, different meta-analyses that MRD negativity is associated with a better outcome, both for PFS and for overall survival. So if we want to improve on the outcome of the patients and potentially cure some patients, we need to reach MRD negativity. That's for sure. And the threshold, the optimal threshold, is 10^-5. But we know that 10^-6, if you're reaching a better response and a deeper response, the outcome will be better. But the point is not to reach MRD negativity, is to have also a sustained MRD negativity. So MRD will remain negative during at least 1 year, or if possible, more than 1 year, 2 or 3 years. And now we have some trials that are specifically looking at this sustained MRD negativity concept. And if we are showing clearly that MRD negativity during 2 to 3 years is associated with a better outcome, then we will be able to work on the optimal duration of maintenance. Because for sure, the toxicity of maintenance, the cost of maintenance, if we can, with good data, sustain MRD negativity 2 years, we can stop the treatment, that will be also very, very important for the patient's quality of life.
And that, I guess, brings up the question of, do you think that right now, today, we're curing any patients with myeloma?
Yes, well, for sure. That's always the big question. We discuss about standard risk and high risk. Currently, I think that we are not curing a lot of high-risk patients. But for patients with standard risk disease at the time of diagnosis, especially if we are reaching MRD negativity with good combinations or quadruplet combination, I believe that, yes, we are going to cure patients. And we have, for example, a study in France called the MIDAS study that is a risk-adapted strategy. We are looking at MRD negativity after induction. And then patients are randomized to stem cell transplantation or no stem cell transplantation when they are MRD negative. And for sure, we are going to cure some standard risk patients at diagnosis that are reaching MRD negativity very early before high dose treatment. And I'm almost sure that in the near future, we will cure half of those patients.
So as an example, what about the case that one of the docs submitted, 64-year-old, status post DRVD and bone marrow transplant, 17p deleted, MRD negative. Question wants, I guess, you know, again, putting aside whether or not you can access it and costs, would you go with just lenalidomide or Lendara maintenance?
Well, currently, in France, for example, this patient will be able to receive only Len maintenance single agent because that's the only drug approved and reimbursed. But I believe that we will have the Perseus study, the Auriga study. There is also a study from the SWOG group looking at Len versus Lendara. And I'm almost sure that Lendara will be the winner. So in the future, probably, yes, Lendara maintenance instead of Len. But we need the data that we don't have officially in terms of randomized phase 3 trials.
What about this next case here, 74-year-old with severe renal dysfunction, 3 versus 4 drug upfront treatment, the doc wants to know.
Well, that's a very difficult question. And you know that currently there are two studies ongoing that are comparing in phase 3 trials VRD versus VRD plus daratumumab or VRD plus isatuximab, the IMROSE and the Cepheus study. So 3 versus 4 drugs. And I believe that 4 drugs in an elderly, very elderly patient, especially with comorbidities, is sometimes very, very difficult to tolerate. The responses are incredible, but the tolerance is difficult. But if we are using DRD, we know that Dara plus lenalidomide is feasible in frail patients, elderly patients, and also in patients with a renal impairment. So I would go for DRD and reduce dexamethasone very quickly, and the patient could receive Len with the adapted dose of Len, because we know that for patients with renal impairment, we need to reduce the dose of Len, obviously. But Len adapted plus daratumumab is a very, very good combo for this this gentleman, for example.
So here we actually have 3 elderly cases that were submitted from the docs. 85-year-old man who's frail but with preserved renal function. So that's one case. Another one is 91-year-old patient with P53 mutant disease, been on Dara Dex for 2 years in CR. Would you stop? And then the third case, 89-year-old woman who by the time she got treated had severe transfusion-dependent anemia, bone disease, no cord compression, a lot of back pain, renal impairment, borderline ECOG status. obviously not transplant eligible. Any thoughts about these three elderly patients?
Yeah, interesting and not that simple, in fact. For the first case, 85-year-old gentleman, frail, with an adequate renal function, VRD light or CD38-based regimen. In fact, VRD light is an adaptation, you know, of bortezomib, with the weekly bortezomib instead of twice weekly, reduced dose of len, 15 instead of 25, the VRD light regimen was developed by the Boston group, in fact, and published in the British Journal of Hematology. The results are not that bad, in fact, and that's quite interesting, indicating that you can use a triplet with bortezomib and len, even in frail patients. But when you're looking at the PFS, I would prefer to use DRD. I would prefer to use len plus daratumumab. We have this subgroup analysis, the frail analysis of frail patients enrolled into MAIA. And to my opinion, the best results are with len and daratumumab. Second case, 81, P53 mutation on Daradex with CR. Well, Daradex, that's quite unusual to use Daradex. In fact, alone, I would say, in the relapse setting, you know. And 2 years of CR in a relapse patient very old with P53 mutation is quite unusual. So when the patient is responding, I would not stop because probably he will progress immediately when we are going to stop the treatment. But that's really an unusual case. And the last one, 89, non-transplant candidate for sure. And with the borderline ECOG, we are proposed in a French study. We did compare Lendex versus Dara Len without dexamethasone. And Len plus Dara without Dex is very, very effective for these very elderly, frail patients. So I would go with treatment without dexamethasone, with a combination of Len and daratumumab as well.
So one more case I'm curious about, this one down at the bottom, the 65-year-old patient with T1114. Would you approach the patient? I mean, obviously, venetoclax is going to be a consideration at some point, but how do you think about first-line therapy in these patients any differently than other patients?
I would not treat this patient differently as part of frontline treatment. This patient with 1114 has a standard risk disease. It has only 1114. So I would go for a combination with a VRD, DARA, and stem cell transplantation, probably. If the patient is young and fit. But that's quite interesting, you know, to keep in mind that we will use probably in the relapse setting, venetoclax. And we are, as you know, waiting for the results of a very important study, the CANOVA study, and the data will be released very, very soon. That compared prospectively in the relapse setting, POMDEX versus venetoclax-dex. And this study could be the pivotal study for the official approval of venetoclax in 1114 patients.
What are your thoughts about the best way to approach these patients in relapse disease? I've heard a lot of interest in, you know, proteasome inhibitors plus venetoclax, particularly carfilzomib.
Yeah. In fact, we have some phase 2 data and that are published with venetoclax in combination, you know, with either PIs or IMIDs as well. And venetoclax plus daratumumab plus CD38 antibody. And their data are very, very good. So maybe for 1114 patients, venetoclax could be a drug of choice, but not alone. It is possible to combine venetoclax with CD38 antibodies for sure. And the data are coming, for example, from Dr. Ballis in Canada, in Calgary, showing very, very good results with CD38 plus venetoclax.
So here are some questions about relapse disease. Again, one of the most common questions here you see at the top, and you commented on this in your talk, retreatment with anti-CD38. And while you were talking about the fact there's not much reason to think somebody would benefit who progressed on CD38, I guess there probably would be patients who have not seen anti-CD38 in years. Would that make a difference?
Yes, the retreatment is a very important question. And how long, what is the optimal time interval between one combination with the CD38 and a new one, including a CD38? What is true is that if you are progressing on Dara or on isatuximab, the use of a CD38 antibody is not logical at all. But if we are waiting from 3 to 6 months, CD38 is re-expressed. It means that you can re-challenge your patient with a combination, including a CD38 antibody, when the time interval is at least 6 months. That's what is proposed, for example, by Niels van der Donk, who is an expert in the field, and he proposed this 6 month time interval in the educational session at ASH, for example.
So I was thinking about that when we were talking before about the loss of CD38 that you were commenting on, and I was just thinking, can a community-based oncologist order a CD38 assay?
This is something that is feasible. In fact, you need to have a bone marrow aspirate and send this bone marrow aspirate in the lab that will be able to look at CD38 expression by flow cytometry very easily. But we know that's not a loss of expression. That's CD38 is not lost. CD38 is downregulated. And when the disease, when you have some time later, after 3 to 6 months, there is always a re-expression. That's not a new clone without CD38. That's the same clone, and CD38 is re-expressed after a certain period of time, at least 3 months. So this is not something that we are doing in routine. We are not testing the expression of CD38. To my opinion, that's not mandatory, not necessary in a daily practice.
So some patient cases here are also presented. A lot of cases like this 50-year-old patient, status post RVD and transplant, now has a biochemical relapse on lenalidomide. And you know, harken back to your algorithm slide looking at len. This would be, I guess, len refractory patient. Any thoughts about this particular situation with a 50-year-old patient?
Yeah, that's a good, definitely a good question. And that's, those patients, you know, we are seeing a lot of them, you know, in routine, in the daily practice. So for sure, this patient is len refractory. And, I would use, for sure, a CD38 antibody, but not with lenalidomide. I would like to combine, for example, Dara or isatuximab with KD, but we know that with carfilzomib, the schedule is not very convenient because that's carfil on day 1, 2, 8, 9, 15, 16 in 28-day cycles. So that's 6 infusions IV per month. That's really a lot. So we can use the weekly carfil, or we can combine with pomalidomide in the POMDEX-ISA or POMDEX-daratumumab combination.
Here's another case, a 64-year-old high-risk myeloma who did not respond to DARA-VRD. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, what is proposed is a carfil-dex is a correct next step, or you can use also isa-pom-dex, for example, if you don't want to use carfilzomib because of the schedule. So that's a logical step for sure. And in terms of efficacy, isatuximab is similar to Dara for this specific patient, to my opinion.
So here's another interesting case, a 73-year-old man with non-ischemic cardiomyopathy, pacemaker placement, treated with RVD and maintenance lenalidomide now has a progression, I guess, presumably on the maintenance therapy. So question mark of second line treatment, ESA, which you were just commenting on, isatuximab versus daratumumab. Does the cardiomyopathy enter into your decision-making at this point?
No. Definitely, I will use a combination with the CD38, and definitely you can select either ESA or DARA. There will not be any difference. Currently, isatuximab is not approved sub-Q, so from a convenience point of view, many of our colleagues are using DARA sub-Q because they don't want to use ESA IV. But as soon as isatuximab will be available sub-Q, probably there will be these two options equally used, to my opinion.
So speaking of sub-Q, here's a 62-year-old man with rash every time he gets sub-Q Daro. The doc wants to know, what should I do? Have you seen that?
Yes, in fact, this is something that is possible. We should be careful, you know, when speaking about daratumumab allergy, I would say. We can have some rash, but we need to be sure that is local, yes or no. If you have sub-Q administration and local erythema, local reactions, then you can switch to IV. If you have a disseminated rash with sub-Q, the same will be with IV as well. So that's important to look if it's really localized, yes or no. And if localized, you can use DARA IV, and you will not have those, obviously, skin reaction. But with a disseminated rash, DARA IV will not help. In fact, the same toxicity will be observed.
Have you actually observed a disseminated rash, and any reason to think, or maybe even tried, you know, switching from, you know, DARA to ESA?
No, I have no idea and no experience. But, you know, the skin toxicity of daratumumab that is precluding the use of DARA, that's very, very, very rare indeed. And in this setting, you know, more often the skin toxicity is related to imids and that are combined with the daratumumab and not to DARA itself.
That's a really good point. What about this question here? After a few months with DARA, do people still need pretreatment with steroids and antihistamine?
In fact, no. When you don't have any reactions after 2 to 3 months, you can stop, in fact, the pretreatment with steroids and probably with antihistamine as well.
64-year-old patient, 2 episodes of recurrent pneumonia on DARA. The doc wants to know whether he should consider prophylactic antibiotics long-term. The patient's already on IVG-IG.
No, that's a very important question, in fact, especially if you have IGIV replacement already. Yes, in this setting, I would like to use antibiotics systematically, prophylactically, for such a patient. The choice could be, penicillin alone or a combination, but this is something that we are doing, yes. There was an interesting question, yeah. 87-year-old on DRD with VGPR mm-hmm. after 6 cycles. Can steroids be discontinued, and if yes, when? Definitely, the long-term use of dexamethasone, especially in very elderly patients, is an issue because we have this diabetic issue, the ocular toxicity, the cataract issue with dexamethasone, the psychiatric effects as well. And so when the patient is responding very well after 6 cycles, we are trying to decrease dex from 20, because we are using 20 milligrams weekly in patients above the age of 75 years. We are decreasing from 20 to 10 to 5 and then stopping. And then the patient, many patients, are treated only with Len plus daratumumab.
This is an interesting case. 73-year-old African-American man gets RVD and transplant. Now, interesting, we were talking about the lack of benefit of transplant in African-American people. Now, biochemical recurrence, gets first injection of Dara, doesn't say what with, but goes home 3 hours later, severe rigors and chills. How do you manage this in a patient who's home?
Yeah, in fact, we need to be sure that the patient did receive an adequate pre-medication with low dose of steroids, with an antihistamine and also paracetamol that we are giving systematically. In case of rigors and chills at home, you can reintroduce a low dose of dexamethasone, for example, 20 milligrams plus paracetamol, and this will control very easily these side effects at home, to my opinion.
So another question here, quote, one of the common side effects of CD38 monoclonal antibodies is leg edema, especially in elderly patients. What interventions do you recommend to prevent this or treat it?
Well, very difficult question because I don't have any, magic wand, you know. See, these are the usual, things that we are speaking about, edema, you know, the patient should have rest, putting their legs up, you know, like that. Or I'm not using, you know, diuretic in this situation, you know, never. That's not that easy to manage.
One of the docs has a 75-year-old patient with plasma cell leukemia, treated with DRVD, initially now progressing. Any thoughts?
Well, that's a very, very difficult case because obviously plasma cell leukemia is maybe the worst case scenario, you know, for multiple myeloma. Very aggressive disease, rapidly progressive disease with short responses. And the patient already did receive lenalidomide, bortezomib, CD38, and Dex. So we have here in one line of treatment exploring all the classes of agents available. So what you could do, in fact, is either to select pomalidomide instead of len, carfilzomib instead of bortezomib, and dexamethasone, so the KPD regimen plus a CD38 antibody, or you are switching to a combination that is more like a chemo, you know, the VDT pace, for example, because the plasma cell labeling index is probably high. And so either KPD DARA or VTD pace or let's say chemotherapy, including anthracycline, for example.
So a number of questions about blood banking anti-CD38. One doc says, quote, I've not really had difficulty with transfusion / cross-matching in this patients on anti-CD38. Is the extensive blood banking testing and evaluation really necessary?
Yeah, well, when we used daratumumab first, we are really fearing, you know, some toxicities or side effects, I would say, like infusion-related reactions or blood banking. But this is not an issue anymore, you know, so we don't have to fear difficulty when we need to transfuse the patients. That was more than a potential side effect or than a real issue in the routine practice.
So interesting question here about the use of anti-CD38 in smoldering disease. And somebody says, what about single agent DARA?
Yes, in fact, you know that we tested single agent DARA in smoldering disease into a study, the Santorus study, and we looked at small duration of daratumumab versus long duration of daratumumab versus no treatment. And in fact, long duration of daratumumab is able to delay the progression, but is not curing any patient. So this is not approved and not, to my opinion, recommended. That was interesting to see if we are able to delay the progression of smoldering myeloma, and probably yes, with the long-term use of DARA, but not with a single agent. We need probably to combine with other agents. And you know that there are trials looking at VRD daratumumab in smoldering or KRD daratumumab in smoldering as well. But there is no official approval. So this is not something that I'm doing at all.
So one final question, and this one's from me. I'd like, I was sitting here thinking to myself, any speculations or predictions about where we're going to be, say, 3 or 4 years from now in terms of upfront treatment in general?
Oh, very interesting. You know that currently the standard of care for elderly is DRD. So we should try to improve on DRD, the MAIA combination. So we can add a proteasome inhibitor. And there is a study in France looking at DRD versus DRD plus bortezomib. So the quadruplet is better than a triplet with DRD. This is a question mark. So we need this study. Or can we replace some agents with bispecific antibodies? And you know that there are some attempts to combine BiTEs, especially Tecli or ELRA, with daratumumab. And we will have randomized trials. And another study is ongoing comparing VRD alone versus VRD plus CAR-T, cilta-cel, the CARTITUDE 5 study. So many important data, but I'm not sure, you know, that we are going, it will be very difficult, you know, to improve on the MAIA results with VRD. For young patients, I believe that stem cell transplantation will be very, very important. And a quadruplet plus stem cell transplantation, to my opinion, will be the backbone. And we can discuss this with Paul Richardson because he's not totally happy of what I'm saying now, probably. And I would like to have a study looking at quadruplet stem cell transplantation, maintenance, or CAR-T. I believe that CAR-T after stem cell transplantation, when the tumor burden is very, very low, CAR-Ts are very active, and potentially we could cure patients with such a study. But this study design is not available yet. So I believe that we have to work and to speak with the pharma companies to do this study, quadruplet stem cell transplantation, and then randomize patients, maintenance or CAR-T.
This concludes our program. Special thanks to Professor Moreau, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love for Oncology Today.